Hollywood hoop dreams aren't only made from magic. They also come in the form of original podcasts from the Hoopball Network.
So if you're the Lakers zooming out, are you tempted to bring back DeMarcus Cousins in the playoffs? And do you disrupt the dynamic at that point if he's healthy enough to play?
Join Ethan, JC, and the thriving Lakers community around the world to talk about all things Lakers.
The Lakers this season has come to expect of this team is consistent winning. That is something we have not been able to say since I've seen Andrew Bynum in a Lakers uniform.
The show is available everywhere pods are found, and you can follow the show on Twitter at HoopBallLakers.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Pelican Scoop, back for another episode. I am Miles Swithenbank. Thanks for joining us once again. Today we've got a really big show. I'm joined by a very, very special guest, and we might as well get straight into that. I'd like to welcome Steve Vidovich. His reputation precedes him. Steve is a great guy over in the hoop-bull.com spectrum. He's our big boss over in the podcasting side of things. He keeps us all in line, and yeah, it's great to have you on board. How are you going, Steve?
Hey, I'm doing well, Lyle. Hey, it's great to be on. You're too kind with your words. We at Hoop Ball, we're all a team here, and it's great to be on talking Pels. One of the most exciting young teams in the league right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you here. This is, as we spoke of off air, this is my first interview with and my first guest that I'm going to be having on the Hoop Ball Pels podcast, the Pelican Scoop. So it's exciting. It's definitely going to give the viewers something, well, the listeners, I guess they are, something to listen to, and a different view than just my Australian drawl time and time again. So, I mean, you did an article for the Pels on Hoopball, or about the Pels on Hoopball recently. It was a bit of a breakdown, and that's part of the fantasy snapshot, series that you're doing over at Hoopball with a few of the other guys. Can you tell us about that a little bit? What the fantasy snapshot series is all about, and what you're doing over there?
Yeah, so with the fantasy snapshots, my goal is to give people just a little bit to wet their beak on each team. I spin some yarns on there, so to speak. So I like to start it off with a few fun facts about some of the exciting players, both from like a reality perspective, but focus mainly on the fantasy. And then I dive in and basically give people the players that produced fantasy value in 8 or 9 cat leagues, as well as points leagues. And then what I do later on down the article is I will project those players going forward for next season. The players that are likely to be standard league values, meaning in value in 12 team leagues. And then guys that have a chance to produce standard league value if certain things break their way. Talk about upcoming free agents and then upcoming draft picks of each of the teams. I really enjoyed writing the Pelicans one because, like I said, I mean, it is a great time to be a Pelicans fan. Probably the best time to be a Pelicans fan in 20 odd years, maybe since Chris Paul, back when they had Chris Paul back in the day when they were the New Orleans Hornets.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I've had the opportunity to go back and watch a few of the games. I actually went back to the start of the season, and the last couple of episodes I've been reviewing those, and there'll be one attached to this as well. So I'll talk about that later on in the show. Game number 3 of the year. And to see these guys, that high energy players, all of them are young, and a lot of them are the Lakers or ex-Laker draft picks that have been traded down there in the Anthony Davis trade. 9 new players on the team, you know, you expect a bit of teething problems in the beginning. all of a sudden you've got nine new players on the roster. They've got to go and learn a new game plan under Alvin Gentry. Run and gun, it seems to be. It's a higher pace sort of thing. Do you think that may have led to a few issues earlier on in the season?
I absolutely think so. I think, you know, you bring in all this young talent. You basically have Drew Holiday as the mainstay there and pretty much no one else. I mean, you can make an argument that Jahlil Okafor and Kenrich Williams were there last year, but their roles were very minimal this season. So bringing in all those new bodies definitely affected their start to their season. One fact I had from my snapshot was that the top five leaders in minutes per game on the season for the Pelicans were all under the age of 30 years old, with Drew Holiday being the oldest, but everyone else was 22 or 24 years old, 24 or younger. So four out of the top five guys in minutes per game were under the age of 25. And three of them are special players in Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Zion Williamson. So, and yes, they struggled early, but their future is extremely bright.
Oh, yeah, well said, I think. And like, I mean, it's exciting to see these young guys. You know, Brandon Ingram, and I've been singing his praises for the last few episodes as well. He really took a jump this season. It seemed to be that he went from a guy that was sort of working it out. He wasn't very strong in his body, very long, skinny sort of guy. Came down to the Pelicans, just looked strong, looked confident. He got named an all-star. You know, this guy really seemed to take a leap. You know, I can't sing his praises enough, I guess. And do you think becoming the alpha dog, I suppose, of the team thereabouts, getting high usage rate, help with that development? You think that probably renewed his confidence a little bit or something like that?
I definitely think so. I think we saw a different Brandon Ingram than we did over the first three seasons. He might have been stunted a little bit in Los Angeles. It seems like over the past 5-6 years, they've struggled to develop their young talent. And they went in a different direction, which was probably in their best interest, getting Anthony Davis. But Brandon Ingram going to the Pelicans was the best thing that could possibly happen for him. He had career highs in practically every statistical category. I mean, him being a go-to scorer on that team in crunch time, it gives a player a lot more confidence moving forward. I think that we're going to see this version of Brandon Ingram for years to come in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, he is hoping. I mean, the guy's, how old is he? 22 or so, isn't he? 22 years old, you know. And a guy like that, where you see these, I mean, it's very early. And I know coming out of college, they were comparing him to Kevin Durant a bit with the length and the scoring ability. Do you think his ceiling is that high? Do you think he could step in as the heir apparent to Kevin Durant as that sort of top scorer in the league? Or is that maybe a stretch?
I don't know if he could. Kevin Durant was before the Achilles injury, he was one of the best three players in basketball, maybe the best player in basketball. One thing that I think is the reason for the comp is that Brandon Ingram has the ability to get his shot off on almost any defender. And I think in a way you could compare that to Kevin Durant. I don't know if Brandon Ingram has the size to be an elite defender, which Kevin Durant showed in Golden State that he could be an elite defender when he wanted to. So I think he'll be a little bit limited version of Kevin Durant would be his ceiling, like a Kevin Durant light. I don't think he's ever going to lead the league in scoring, but I don't think he needs to on this young team. I don't think Brandon Ingram is the type of guy who wants to be the alpha. I think he might be okay with having a group of players work with him to, you know, as a group, be the alpha, where he's not the number one, because there's a lot of other great talent on this team. And I think that there might be a couple other guys that end up becoming the alpha over Ingram. But the Pelicans do have an interesting question this offseason, where Ingram is going to be a restricted free agent, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of contract, because it seems very likely that they'll bring him back. but what kind of contract he demands.
Well, you know, when you produce like he did this year, if they don't get the checkbook out, I think we might be in a bit of trouble. Because I know some teams will definitely be looking at him and saying, well, you're a restricted free agent. We can throw some cash at you, either match or we'll take you. You mentioned other young talent on that team as well. And I was seeing how we were going to segue into that. But the big story coming into this season was the Pelicans traded Anthony Davis. They ended up with the number one pick. And that became Zion Williamson. Hype train level 100. You know, he is just phenomenal talent. He's built like Zach Randolph, but jumps like Derrick Rose in his prime. You know, this guy is just unbelievable. He then got injured and missed three quarters of the season. We only really saw about 18 or so games, if that, I think, from Zion. When he came in, we did see Ingram defer to him a bit, and that usage went up for Zion. Do you think he morphs into this transcendent talent? Could he become the future of the NBA? I mean, the hype is there, but does his skill translate into that?
So I do think that if anyone on this team becomes the absolute alpha, I think it will be Zion. Something that I found using NBA.com is that the starting five of Jrue Holiday, Derek Favors, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and Zion Williamson played 230 minutes together on the court this season. And I believe Zion played roughly 550 minutes total this season. So in those 230 minutes that the projected starting five of the season came back, that they had a net rating of 26.3. Their offensive rating was 117.9, which ranked third on the team out of any five-man combinations who played over 50 minutes. And their defensive rating was even more impressive at 91.6. So I think that Zion has the ability to affect the offensive side of the court and the defensive side. And I think that's why I would put him above Brandon Ingram on the totem pole.
Completely agree. We actually looked at these top five starting lineups throughout the season as well. And that one piqued my interest 100%. It sat right above everything else I looked at. I guess this is a typo in this. And if that's a segment of what we're going to see, that high tempo, high scoring, run and gun mentality, Lonzo throwing the ball from half court and Zion somehow catching it over his head and dunking it in, you know, it's exciting, but it's also producing, I suppose, on the stat sheet and on the field, you know, they're outscoring and defending well. So hopefully we can keep this team together. And if it means you've got to pay Brandon Ingram, well, you've lost Anthony Davis's contract. A lot of the guys are on short-term deals that they did sign in the offseason. So perhaps Brandon Ingram does get the near-on-max deal that he might well deserve just to keep it together. It's so difficult to be able to see what the Pelicans are going to be in even 6 months, even well, or 2 years. How good are these guys going to be? Do you think, in a perfect vacuum, do you think if Zion hadn't have been injured, the Pels could have made the playoffs? I mean, they looked like they were on the cusp and they were still competing when we went to hiatus, but do you think they would have been more of a, not contender, but at least in the playoff hunt earlier on in the season?
I think they would have still had early season struggles, just integrating so many new bodies into the system. But I do think you could extrapolate a few more wins for them overall. So maybe instead of sitting in 10th right now, they'd be sitting in 9th. Maybe they'd even have the 8th seed. I wouldn't say that this team would have done any better than the 8th seed in a perfect world, only because it was their first year together, integrating a lot of young, talented players. Alvin Gentry is a great coach for them to have because he likes to run and gun and score like crazy. I would say if Zion was healthy the whole year, at best, they would be sitting where the Memphis Grizzlies are sitting, about 500 would be.
Yeah, I think, like you said, you're adding in over half of a new roster. You know, you're adding guys that have never played, well, a couple of guys come down from the Lakers, but a lot of other guys hadn't played together. JJ Redick was added. Derek Favors came in. You see these guys, and as they got more comfortable, we went on a bit of a run. Whose team, actually, let me step back. Whose team do you think this is now? As the players, you know, in the off-season, David Griffin said, this is Drew's team. We're going to let him score as much as he wants. He could be an MVP this year. Is it Drew Holiday's team? I mean, Brandon Ingram then stepped up, then Zion stepped in. Who do you think is the current alpha dog for this season?
So as far as the what's going on in the locker room, which I'm not privy to, but I would like to think that the older guys are helping mentor the younger guys. So I would say that Drew Holiday is the leader of the team, even though he's a great player because he has the ability to defer to better scorers like Brandon Ingram. So even if he's not taking the last shot of the game, he can still be considered the alpha by leading the team both on and off the court. I think that's also why they got Derek Favors and why they got JJ Redick, because they wanted some older veterans in there to help teach the guys. Because it's not just basketball that they're learning. They're learning about life for all of them, more money than they've ever had. So they seem to me to be good mentors both on and off the court. And one interesting thing about Drew Holiday is he's kind of similar to Lonzo Ball in that he has two brothers who are in the NBA, where Lonzo is about to have a brother come into the NBA. So it's two basketball families on the same team, which is really interesting. And their ability to play together is fantastic. But I'm getting off track here. I would say Drew Holiday, Derek Favors, and JJ Redick together would have been like the vets on the team helping the young guys, but Drew being the primary guy.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's interesting to see Lonzo play alongside and I suppose understudy Drew a bit because they are similar type of players. You know, they're that long, defensive-minded, pass-first sort of point guard. Drew can turn it on. I mean, in his final game against Minnesota, he dropped about 38 or something. He absolutely went off before he went on hiatus. That ability to know when to turn it on and know when to defer to others and ride the hot hand, whether that be B.I. or it be Zion or it be J.J. Redick or Josh Hart, anyone that's on, I think that takes the maturity of a strong leader and a good point guard. And that's what you want, is your point guard to be the leader of the team and direct traffic, the coach on the court, per se. I can see those comparisons. Do you think eventually Lonzo could play against Drew Holiday as a more consistent sort of backcourt duo? You know, at times they sort of, they would stagger them so they would come on and off at different times throughout the season. Do you think a starting five of Lonzo and Drew and then I suppose B.I. Zion, maybe Derek Favors, or could be a potential going forward?
I definitely think so. I believe that they might become the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. Their ability on the defensive end, being on-ball defenders, off-ball defenders, I really think that is a huge plus for them because most teams' backcourts have liabilities on defense. Usually one of the players is a liability. With those two players, neither of them are a liability, and they basically become Lonzo or Drew Holiday and Rajon Rondo from a few years ago, but on steroids because Lonzo Ball is far superior to what Rajon was when he was on the Pelicans. So I think that backcourt is the backcourt of the future for the Pelicans. That's definitely a huge strength they have right now.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw later on in the season Lonzo Ball turn into a really good player. I mean, his stats shot through the roof. He seemed a bit more composed up and down the court. Earlier on, he was still taking some three-pointers, and I've talked about it in my game reviews earlier this podcast. He settles for three-pointers. He just didn't look like he had his legs under him a bit. That seemed to, I suppose, change throughout the season. He jump shots started falling. He started making high IQ shots. His defensive IQ is right up. I mean, for a guy that, I suppose, is known more for his passing, his actual pass anticipation it mirrors from what he is doing on the offensive end onto the defensive end. You know, he can see where that ball's going to go. And there's so many steals that I've seen even in the first couple of games that he's just anticipated. He's picked off like the pass was going to him. I think that will continue to develop. Do you think the next step for him is a consistent jump shot? He has a weird sort of shooting style, which he worked on in the offseason. We're seeing that his legs are still taking a bit of time to get under him and work on that new jump shot. Do you think that is probably the thing that's keeping him between a very good point guard to being an elite point guard?
Yeah, I would agree. I think that he definitely needs to continue to work on that shot. I don't think he will ever be a great three-point shooter, but being a threat from distance would really help in any team's offensive system. But I do think that his shot needs to get better. But I do think that he has an ability without the shot to be a very good point guard in the NBA. I also think that perhaps part of the reason why he got off to a slower start might have been injury related. I think he got a little bit banged up in early going of the season because he exploded, like you said, as the season went on. I wrote here, this is fantasy related, but his value in fantasy leagues, 8 and 9 cat, he was around the 9th and 12th round before December 1st. And then after December 1st, he was producing fourth round in 8 cat and 6th round in 9 cat value. So he jumped quite a few rounds from December 1st on, which is a pretty large sample size of games. So I think even without the jump shot, Lonzo will be a really solid player. If he's able to shoot with a little bit more efficiency, he could become that all-star point guard.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a fantasy perspective, I mean, that's where we both cut our teeth, I suppose, with HoopBall was in the fantasy side of things and continue to do on and off throughout the journey. But on that, who do you think is the biggest fantasy asset on the Pelicans? Is it Lonzo?
As far as a fantasy asset for next season, I would say the number one guy, in my opinion, would be Zion Williamson, but with a stipulation. And that stipulation is he's a terrible free throw shooter. And so as long as that is the case, I think you would have to do a punt free throw build to have Zion in your team because he's going to get to the line. And if he shoots it at 65%, that's not going to do it. But I think outside of his free throw percentage, he has the biggest upside in terms of his statistical, his stat set. He didn't even produce very many defensive stats in his time this season, but it was only a 19-game sample size. So I'd put Zion first, which might be slightly controversial. I'd put Brandon Ingram just right behind there, like a 1B. And then Lonzo and Drew would be right there behind them. But I might go with Lonzo over Drew Holiday to start next season, just because I think that his chemistry with Zion and the need for the team to grow those young players is so important for their future. So I would say Zion.
Yeah. I've just done a dynasty draft, which was a big long snake one based on next season, and Zion went in the top 5. I think everyone's hyping it up. 100% agree with the free throws. That's something that if he can get it up even to a serviceable 75, you know, that would be, you could live with that. You know, that takes him that next step. You know, that's a big knock on guys like Giannis and stuff like that. And from a fantasy perspective, you got these guys that are transcendent talents that can't shoot free throws and absolutely kills your game unless you're going to punt free throws, which is a pain because it's quite an easy category to win if you can build that up. Easy point. Staying on the fantasy vein for a bit, Derek Favors joined the team this year. He only averaged about 22 to 25, I think, minutes per game. He still had a fairly solid season fantasy-wise. Do you think he could keep that going with, I suppose, the development of Jackson Hayes stepping in? Does Derek Favors stay fantasy relevant?
I think if he maintains that let's say, at least over 22 minutes and preferably like 24 to 26 minutes a game. I definitely think he can be a fantasy asset later in drafts, maybe seventh, eighth, ninth round value guy. I do believe in Jackson Hayes in the future. I don't think it'll happen next season. So if the Pelicans can keep Favors on a team-friendly deal for one or two more seasons, and he's seeing 24 minutes, I definitely think he can be somebody that is worth rostering in standard leagues. I do think the time of his fantasy production is coming closer to an end, but I don't think that end is next season.
Yeah, well, I managed to pick him up on one of my leagues off the waiver wire after he had a bit of a slump. I think he was away dealing with some family issues, and there was a bit of injury stuff there as well. So I managed to snag him, and I was quite impressed with what you were still getting from him in such a small sort of minutes per game cap. Guys that stepped in from an actual real life perspective, watching Derek Favors on the court, the team it's chalk and cheese. The guy is far and away the defensive anchor, and even at some points they defer to him on the offensive end, and he goes and gets a bucket. When he goes off, we get guys like Jahlil Okafor come in. Jackson Hayes he showed that he was a rookie for a lot of the season. He had some big games when Derek went out later on in the season, but earlier on, Jackson Hayes looked like a rookie. And I think I completely agree. I don't think the step is next year, but perhaps the year after when he gets stronger, he gets used to playing against these big bodies. A guy that surprised me, though, and I mentioned him briefly, was Jahlil Okafor. The guy was a number three draft pick. In his rookie season, he averaged 17 and change on for points. He was then sort of bounced around the league. Some people were saying he was too, I suppose, large. This year, he looks slim. And while he didn't produce, I suppose, on a fantasy side of things, he still came in as that good backup center. Do you think he hangs around the league? Do you think he could stay as that serviceable backup big man?
I do think that Jahlil's got a role in the NBA for, you know, at least a few more seasons. Every team needs backup bigs. They're becoming harder and harder to find. I don't think he's the type of guy who's ever going to play more than 20 minutes a game. But as far as a 14 to 18 minute guy off the bench to spell your big, I definitely think that he can stick around the league for a bit longer. And he seems to be fine with that role. So as long as he's fine with it, some guys have trouble transitioning. He seemed to transition well. So I could definitely see him sticking around the league for quite a while. And maybe the Pelicans can keep him next year on an affordable contract as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's hoping. I think you hit the nail on the head with that, you know, especially with Derek Favors only being able to play probably maximum 25 without incurring hamstring injuries, stuff like that. We saw a lot of soft tissue stuff. Jahlil Okafor probably has found a bit of a sweet spot in New Orleans where he can come in. He's still a young guy. I think he's only 24 or so. So he fits right in that that future mold as well. If Favors then steps away or leaves later on down the track, you've got heir apparent. Jackson Hayes steps in. Jahlil Okafor could keep that role. So I think, yeah, especially if he can keep the conditioning. That was something that I just didn't realise he had done in the offseason. He just went and he looked skinny, you know, and strong and mobile. And you could see it on the offensive end, especially in the first few games. He was crashing the glass. And you didn't see that a lot earlier on. You know, he got criticised a bit for being lazy. He was, I suppose, at sometimes an old school sort of big that just doesn't have a place in the NBA. But if you can keep this hustle up, you know, all of a sudden you're a valuable bench player. Another guy that came in this year is another ex-Laker, was Josh Hart. Had some big fantasy games and some big games, heart and soul of the team, you know, mind the pun. Do you think, we'll jump back to the fantasy a little bit. Do you think from a fantasy standpoint, he is a guy that you could have in maybe a 12-team roster, great rebounding guard, but does he have any other benefits or do you think he is worth taking a punt on next season?
From a reality perspective, I think Josh Hart is like a perfect glue guy to have on any team. But from a fantasy perspective, I just don't think his stat set is fantasy friendly. He had games this season where he played, you know, 36 minutes and didn't do much on the stat sheet. It doesn't mean that he wasn't productive on the court, doing some of the dirty work, not getting the credit for it, or maybe he did by Pelicans fans, but not around the league. So I think he's a really great role player to have on a team. As far as a 12-team league, the only way I think he could push into value is injuries. With all of the talent they have in front of him, when they're fully healthy, I just don't think there's that role for Josh Hart.
I completely agree with you. I mean, I think he was drafted at the start of the season fairly like a mid-range sort of maybe 11 or 10, 11, 12 sort of range. I saw him on waiver wires all over the fantasy realm. But yeah, then you watch him on the court and you say, oh, that was close to being a steal. Oh, he's interrupted that pass and all of a sudden he's lying on the ground, you know. A lot of that stuff, and there's a few guys at Pelicans, Kendrick Williams is another guy that's like that, Frank Jackson, they're the guys that just go in and get the ball, do the hard work, but it doesn't show up on the stat sheet. And I think you have to have guys that are a bit flashier, like the Brandon Ingram and the Zions, and then you also need the guys that are just going to grind it, get the ball, lock in when they need to, and I think that builds a good team. And I think it starts from the top. I think Drew Holiday has flashes of both, and he's probably instilling that. JJ Redick, great mentor, has been around the league for years now. There was a snippet in the second game of the season, and I keep referencing these early ones because I've just watched them recently, and where JJ Redick is chatting to Lonzo about where he should be standing, this is mid-game, and he says, well, stand there, and you can see him pointing and directing traffic, and things like that, I think, you look back on your career, I can only imagine, and played professional basketball, but you look back on your career and you see those mentoring things and, oh, I picked that up from JJ, I picked that up from Drew. I think you can't discount how important these veterans are on such a young team. Give me thoughts on the veteran presence. I know we talked on it a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's not just the veterans. It's also you have to have chemistry between those veterans and the young guys. There has to be a relationship built, not just on the court, but it's so important in any walk of life to have chemistry outside of when you're supposed to be on, right? So if you work in an office, you want to be able to get along with your coworkers, both the young ones getting along with the older ones, the mentor, so to speak. And I think the Pelicans have that perfect mix right now of young guys willing to learn and older veterans willing to teach.
So good to sit right there with you. Absolutely. I mean, how's that? We don't just talk Pelicans here. We give life advice as well. You know, we get into it. That's what we're about here at the Pelicans Scoop. I completely agree. The mix is perfect. And I think they just need to play more together and we can see this team continue to rise up the West. You know, it's so tough to dig through. There's probably 12 teams that could be in the playoffs at the moment. And I think that just gets deeper as the younger teams get more reps, like the Suns and the Kings are both good sides that are trying to push through as well, along with Memphis and Portland and the Pels as well. So what are your key takeaways? If you can leave us with a couple of things, what are your key takeaways from the season? And then what are your predictions for next season for the Pelicans?
So I would say the key takeaways, Brandon Ingram's surge this season, basically all of the former Lakers and their surge this season with a new scenery in New Orleans, Brandon Ingram, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, those three guys really benefited from a new scenery. I would say another takeaway is that the team doesn't seem to have anybody who doesn't deserve to be on an NBA roster, which I wouldn't be able to say about most teams. Maybe there's one guy not going to be mentioned, but I would say that on their roster, they have all NBA quality players that can be in the league for 5-6 years, even including their older rookie, Nicolo Melli, who I think can be a stretch big for them. Shoot the three, can't play very much because of defensive liability, but they just have such a great mix of young talent with established veterans that aren't too hyped on themselves. So I would say key takeaways, Laker three guys, and just the perfect mix of youth and veterans that, as an NBA fan, if the Pelicans were my team, I think I would be the happiest I've ever been since watching that team. Because you get to watch these young guys grow together, and there's just something so special about watching the players that your team drafted grow together. Yeah, you'll add a few free agents, but most of the guys are homegrown talent, and there's just something so special of watching them this year maybe not make the playoffs, but in two or three seasons, they might be in the NBA Finals.
Well, here's hoping, because, you know, I completely agree, and it's exciting. I think Pelicans fans across the globe are chomping at the bit to see what this team can put together, and I'm with you. And we'll keep plugging it here at the Pelicans Scoop, and we'll keep it going. Steve, I'd like to thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate your time on your Friday night. You've provided some great insights for us. And what else have we got to look forward to over at Hoopball? You got any plugs to shout out?
Yeah, so over at Hoopball, one thing that we're cooking up that I'm pretty excited about, we got the fantasy snapshots going. If you guys want to go to hoopball.com and read our fantasy features, we got lots of great writers doing stuff. Something else we're going to be starting is we're going to be starting an expansion draft next Wednesday, and it'll be running every Wednesday until we finish, and that'll be really exciting. We're going to add two new teams, and to do an expansion draft, each existing team has to protect a certain number of players, so it'll be interesting to see which players are protected and then who ends up on the new teams, which we're going to do the Seattle Supersonics and a Louisville team. So I'm really excited about that. That'll be next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And Lyle, it is such a pleasure to join this Hoopball Pels pod. Your past pods doing the history of the team and then leading up into the games have been excellent. I can't wait to hear more of what you're going to be doing.
Oh, I appreciate that. And again, thanks for joining us. The first guest on the Pelican Scoop. How good. Wouldn't have picked a better person.
And my first podcast.
Well, there we go. It's a week of firsts, and no doubt we'll hear plenty from the Pels fans, and we'll keep this going and hopefully get you back on here sometime.
Yeah, happy to hop on whenever you need.
Perfect. All right. Cheers, mate. All right. So how good was that? First guest on the Pelican Scoop. That was a very informative chat, and I really appreciate Steve jumping on to have a chat with us about all things Pelicans and what he's got going on over at hoop-ball.com. Sounds like there's a whole heap going on over there, so make sure you jump over and have a look whenever you get a chance. Now, we might jump into a game review before we wrap up for the week. We're going to have a look at Game 3 against the Rockets. It was at Houston. It was the 26th of October 2019. It was the second night of a back-to-back. The first quarter, we were informed that Drew Holiday was actually out. He tweaked his leg in the third quarter of the game against Dallas, and he'd been listed as out. So we didn't have him for the third game, which I think was a bit of a shock. Looking back in the Game 2 highlights, we could then see that he tweaked his leg a little bit. But, yeah, an unfortunate out. Josh Hart replaced him in the starting lineup. Just needed to point out again that this team had 9 new players in the starting lineup. We got underway, and it was obvious that the chemistry issues were still coming together. We needed to stop the points in the paint. We're getting hammered in there. Favors was the target on the offensive end. They passed him the ball a fair bit. Lonzo gave up a three for a better shot underneath, and that was a great play. It was good to see that maturity start to develop with Lonzo. There's a pick and roll into a bounce pass. Favors to score. Lonzo pushing the ball up the court again. Great ball movement. Ingram hit a big three. And unfortunately, we then had two bad passes, and they made 5 points from those two possessions. Poor defensive rebounding effort again. That's something that I've highlighted in the first couple of games. We've got to finish that play. It's got to secure that defensive rebound. Lonzo kept attacking. I like that aggressiveness, which is something that he needs to keep doing for the rest of the year. Kendrick's William Kenny Hustle grabbed a big offensive rebound. Unfortunately, we then followed on. We had a silly foul from Melly that forced himself through the screener, and there was a three-pointer made off that, and then an end one. So, four-point play, which was a bit of a pain. Later on, we had four guys sitting there watching the rebound, and PJ Tucker, who's only 6'5", playing center, grabbed it and put it back in. We've got to grab the basketball. I was so frustrated. I remember shaking my computer screen watching it. Harden is someone who is just incredible. I think we all know that. He was walking through our defense for layups, which is something that we need to work on. It's either that or foul him. Unfortunately, he seems to score at will against any team. Another couple of Pelicans turnovers. Harden actually had three chances at hitting a three because we didn't secure the defensive rebound. It's so frustrating to watch these guys do something so, well, fail to do something so simple. So we really need to work on that, and hopefully that'll improve. Eight turnovers in the first quarter. We shot 50%, but eight turnovers is going to kill you. It's absolutely going to kill you. The second quarter, the Rockets were up 29-24. Ingram had 11 points early. He started quickly. Then we had more turnovers. Alexander Walker was on. He did a good ball fake and a nice pick and roll into a layup. We were lucky that a broken play led to an Ingram three, so we got away with that. But we do need to focus on that. Early offense, the ball was swinging around the perimeter. Excellent. That unselfish basketball is stuff that we need to keep going. And hopefully when the chemistry comes together, that'll be something that we continue to work on. Kendrick Williams working on getting those O boards is something that is so underrated. Kenny Hustle is an absolute beast at doing that. In this instance, Lonzo cut to the basket and Kenny Hustle hit him and it was another layup. So that was pretty good. It was nice to see the ball movement. Josh Hart was on. He was bringing the heat. He interrupted Harden's dribble and then it turned into a clear path foul. So that was pretty good that he managed to do that. He managed to drag it back to 51 all and then Hart hit a free throw, put us up. Unfortunately, Williams then fouled Daniel House on three and they got three free throws. That was a bit of a pain, but you know, you learn that. He's only a young player. Kenny Hustle, he then made up for it and stopped Harden, caused an offensive foul. That was pretty good. He redeemed himself almost immediately. Pick and pop with Melly, free throw line jumper. Lonzo hit a big three. And then we saw the famous gif of Harden smashing the ball against his own head and Josh Hart looking at him like he was unwell. So that was pretty funny to see that in real life, the perplexed Josh Hart. At halftime, it was 61 all. Went into the third quarter, there was some great passing, ball movement to open Lonzo 3. He misses, but it was the right shot to take, so you're happy with that. There was some stupid errors after House hit a 3, ball went out of bounds. B.I. then answered with a massive 3. He was up 21 points on 8 of 11 shooting early in the third, so that was pretty interesting to see him continue on his newfound confidence. There was a big transition pass to JJ from Lonzo after a steal, lobbed Ingram, slammed it down. You could see the crowd start to lose their enthusiasm in support of the Rockets and Pelicans started to get a bit of confidence. Lonzo hit a big 3, 73 all. Then Josh Hart got teed up. He was chirping at Harden, a bit of carry-on back and forth. Something that we did time and time again was that the defense kept collapsing under Harden, which you have to do, but at the same time, it then opens up four players on the perimeter to hit threes. So we get punished a bit because he can make those passes, but James Harden's a phenomenal talent. Some great ball movement again from us. Lonzo steal and a jam. There was some BI post up on Rivers. You're happy with that fade away for the two and then the end one. But he did get belted at the same time and that caused a nosebleed. We all fell asleep at one point and Westbrook smashed it down through the basket, massive jam. Frank Jackson, though, underrated mid-range game, really good. Was happy with that. Westbrook went at us again. Then it was 100-97, up the Pels. Ingram had 30-9, and we went into the fourth quarter. Westbrook went at Jahlil a bit, which you don't like to see that mismatch, but unfortunately that's what happened. We mucked around with the ball a bit, and Brandon Ingram caused a turnover, which was a pain. Frank went at the rim hard, scored. Then the Rockets went on a run for the first 5 minutes, playing the five small. Hart hit a big three, but we're getting beaten inside. The last 2 minutes, though, we're down by three. And then Harden drives, gets the and one, which is not something you want. We had two really good looks from three in the last 30 seconds, but unfortunately we didn't make them. Then Harden falls over on the Hart dunk, which was good. Then we're only down by one with 11 seconds. 6 seconds left. Unfortunately, we're down by three. Then we had a broken play, and Josh Hart had to force a three, and we lost, which was a pain because we were with him basically for the full game. So it was 123-126, unfortunately, which puts us 0-3 on the season. But we all know that it gets better, so let's just focus on that. And so that was game three. I think we might leave it at that today. It was a bit longer than we have had in the past few episodes. Thanks again. Must go to my good friend Steve Vidovich for joining us and chatting hoops. That was really, really good fun. Hopefully we'll get him on here again. Thanks to all you listeners for tuning in once again to the Pelican Scoop. Make sure you head over to hoop-ball.com to check out everything we got going on there. And I think I'll leave it at that. Bye for now.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.